Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Shindig, an archaeology podcast brought to you by the Red River Archaeology Group. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Horn, and I'm joined as ever by my co-host and producer extraordinaire, Luke Barry.
Hi guys. Hi Tom, how are we? Are you excited about this one?
I'm very, very excited about this one. It's with the Caithness Broch Project. And now, regular listeners would maybe know that we've interviewed the Caithness Broch Project in the past, and that was about their project to rebuild a broch. And what is a broch? A broch is a circular dry stone tower, maybe look a bit like you see the cooling towers that you'll see in sort of more modern power plants. And the Broch of Musa is maybe one that you can have a look at on the internet to get an idea of what they look like. But they're kind of Iron Age structures. They're all over Scotland, particularly in the north, with a massive concentration around Caithness. And what the Caithness Broch Project want to do is rebuild a broch from scratch. A bit like you've maybe heard of the Guidelong Castle project, where they're building a medieval castle in France. This is essentially something they're trying to do in Caithness with the Caithness Broch Project. And it's really to help a sort of a heritage-led regeneration of the region that's going to be suffering from job losses with the decommissioning of the Dounreay nuclear power plant. So we spoke with Kenneth and Kirsty from the Caithness Broch Project about their exciting plans for the future.
I wasn't there for this interview, but it's a really good one. And I'm really happy I wasn't there because I think ye have pronouncing the word broch recovered really well. It needs to be a Scottish accent, I think. It doesn't work with my Cork accent for some reason.
It's a Scots word, but it's a Scots word that's trying to do an old Norse word, because of course when the Vikings come to that part of Scotland, they see these towers and they call it like a fort, like a borg, and borg becomes broch somehow in Scots. And
but it sounds so Scottish, doesn't it? Say it
does
again.
Sound.
Say it
that's again. The thing. It's
go on,
it's
say broch. Go on.
Broch.
There you broch. Go.
And you'll hear a lot of us saying brochs in the podcast that's coming up, and it's a very special one. It's a great chat, interesting about how heritage can help communities and just these incredible stone towers. So enjoy. Thank you guys for joining us today. We know what brochs are. We all love brochs, but just imagine the Martian is here and you have to explain what a broch is. And again, I call it the inner time question, which I think is a really useful way of in is like, you know, what is a broch? Where are they? When were they built? So if you could just explain it to me, like, I don't really understand what's going on with brochs, which is probably fairly accurate. And we'll start. We've got Kirsty and Kenneth here, and I don't know if we just want to time about. We'll start with Kenneth on this, and then Kirsty, and then you guys can answer whichever order you wish.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to just step in here and answer that question with a question, which is: Does anyone actually really know what's going on with brochs? There's so much to kind of discuss to go into details, but at their most simple, brochs are dry stone towers which date to the Iron Age. These are monumental, massive towers which you can find only in Scotland, which date to about 2,500 years ago, built from about, really, you know, the kind of iconic examples were built from about 200 BC to 100 AD, that sort of period, having evolved from basically from round dry stone structures, eventually gaining more elevation and prominence and size and stature until they became really quite architecturally complex and ingenious, really, constructions. You'll find them all across Scotland, in the south and in the Highlands, curiously kind of absent from Aberdeenshire, it would seem. But you can find some really great examples on the islands and in Shetland, for example. You'll find the most iconic and perhaps well-known broch, which is Musa Broch. But these are, as I say, truly kind of inspiring structures, really complex features such as cells and stairwells which link the floors together. So sort of demonstrating essentially that these structures were multi-storied, they were multi-floored, which is quite a fantastic thought when you consider how long ago they were built. So these, yeah, they are at its most simple, really quite incredible towers made from stone, which you can find in Scotland.
Love it. Kirsty, what would you sort of add to that?
There's not too much to add there, actually. But yeah, I'd just say that, yeah, obviously they belong to this larger classification of Iron Age archaeological sites. And there's a lot of debate in scholarship about, yeah, especially what brochs are for, but also the nature of Iron Age sites in general. For in comparison to other periods, they're often quite like artifactually clean. We don't find many objects when we're digging that many Iron Age sites, especially in Scotland. So that really adds to that sort of mystery or inability to understand brochs as well. I think brochs are slightly better though in terms of artifacts because they are like a center of concentration of them.
Can I just ask, and I'll ask Kenneth afterwards, what brought you to Bros? Because it's, as I understand it, it's not your speciality initially. Your PhD is in Sardinian sort of sites. So if you just tell us a little bit about what brought you into the loving embrace of the Broch world.
It was actually, I think, probably more the Brock project that brought me into Brocks. I have family connections with Caithness anyway, even though I live in Edinburgh. But so Caithness has always been quite a big part of my life. So growing up, I saw a lot of these sites. I visited them. There's some really great, well-preserved examples you can visit as a tourist or as a visitor anyway. And yeah, obviously, I love archaeology in all its forms. And Brocks have that very visual appeal of being like well structured, well maintained, and quite kind of yeah, like awe-inspiring when you see them, especially some of the larger ones. So for me, I think they're very tangible evidence of a piece of the past we don't know that much about. I guess I could say that for all of archaeology, but yeah, they're quite a sort of key feature of that time period, which yeah, that's why I'd like to see one rebuilt in now, or I'd like to learn more about them in general.
Well, maybe the Kenneth can bring us in on the rebuilding project and his interest, which I presume is the archaeology, but also what the project can do for the region. That's sort of one of your main interests as well, isn't it?
It's been 10 years now, over 10 years now, since we myself and Ian McLean co-founded the project. He sort of came up with the idea and really kind of a Facebook page I think he made originally, and we then worked on it together to kind of grow it to where it is now. So I don't know if there's a warm, loving embrace or if it's chewed me up and spat me out, to be honest. Oh, but it's been a long journey, a long laborious journey, like I'm sure building a Broch was 2,000 years ago, but with probably less bureaucracy and red tape and planning permission kind of stuff to deal with. But I can't even remember where I first learned about Brocks. So that's not to speak of the fact that, you know, Brocks are not particularly inspiring. It just speaks more about my poor memory. But it's, you know, we've been on this road now, this journey for 10 years. And we, like I say, we started as a Facebook group, and we've now developed into a committee of a number of hardened volunteers, really enthusiastic individuals from across the UK at the moment, with a membership which is, you know, worldwide and international. You know, we have followers from all over the globe, actually, which has really given us recourse to see it through. So we have most recently selected a site, and I think that's really what the whole project hinges on, is the site selection. It's probably undoubtedly it's not probably undoubtedly, it's undoubtedly the most important aspect of the project, because we are hoping to construct a replica Broch which will help perhaps to answer questions as to, well, how they were built, of course. But I mean, it's an experimental archaeology project at its heart, with you know, connections to, let's say, the Titanic Centre or Gedalon in France. That serves as real inspiration for us. But it also might help us to understand, you know, why they were built as well. Could we, you know, get a look into the Iron Age mindset by actually doing as they did? But of course, on top of that, as you mentioned there, it is about the kind of wider benefits of archaeology, which is something that I'm into. Which is probably my background is public archaeology, the communication of archaeology, and the benefits, the archaeo benefits of our heritage and of our historical landscape. And I think something like this would undoubtedly become an unmissable iconic attraction for not just Caithness, but for all of Scotland as well. So we're really excited to have picked a site, and we're now working on the kind of finer points of that, the fundraising towards acquiring the site. And from there we can commence building, but it's not just building the Brock, it's building everything that would help support the business of the Brock as well. Because this is, although this is an experimental archaeology project, and it is a project where we want to immerse people in the past and kind of transport them back to the Iron Age, we do have to think about modern day practicalities and sensibilities, and we also understand that there's a suspension of belief, because this is also a, well, essentially run as a kind of business, something that attracts people to the area and is a kind of an economic boost for the area as well. So, you know, we have to consider things like toilets and parking and shops and visitor centres and these kind of things as well. So that's it's a project 2,000 years old, but with kind of modern day sensibilities. I always think it's quite funny that despite this being a reconstruction of a, you know, an archaeological monument, it would still be classed as a new build, essentially, in terms of Highland Council planning. So that I think that summarizes that there's a number of complexities which we're due to encounter.
And that's it. You've alluded there to the new site. So this was sort of news just of sort of late last year that you guys have managed to sort of finally find the sort of the site that you want to rebuild this Brock in. So could you tell me a little bit about that process, just, you know, getting the funders and getting the public bodies and the local councils involved, and a little bit about the site that you've chosen, you know, where it is, where it's near in terms of, is it in, I presumably it's near other Brocks, just a little bit about that context and the project going forward.
Yeah, it's it was a long process, and as I said earlier, I mean that we didn't want to rush into things, because this is probably the most important part. Where we site our Brock will have impact on planning permissions and the SER regulations surrounding it. On top of that, of course, we have to think about the kind of economic implications and the tourist numbers too. The North Highlands have ultimately benefited from like the North Coast 500, or certainly the tourism numbers have risen to such an extent that it's something that we want to be part of, essentially. It would really help with the sustainability of a project like this, and ultimately the success of a project. So we kind of always wanted it to be near to the North Coast 500, not exactly precisely on it, but near to, at least, so that would encourage more people and more footfall. So over the last 2 years, we looked at a number of sites all across Caithness to begin with. But for whatever reason, these sites would fall through. And then I think it was 2021, we had another offer, which was a little bit north of Lather in a place called Flygla, which is quite close to Rumster Forest. It has a beautiful view of the iconic hills of Caithness. Caithness, of course, notoriously flat. You can see 30 miles to Morvern, Maidenpap, and beyond, actually. So it's quite a stunning vista to be had from there. And yes, to answer your point, it is also actually kind of situated very near some Brocks. About 1 kilometre away, you've got Galseray Brock, which is unexcavated, unexplored. And a few hundred yards from Galseray, you have another Brock. I mean, you're never far from a Brock, really, in Caithness, and you do get these kind of collections of Brocks. Whether they were contemporaneous is another thing. But we liked this site. It had a supportive landowner. There was a lot of land on offer. I mean, I sometimes describe this project as a bit of a theme park. So there could be a lot to add to this, and we kind of want to, you know, really immerse people into the Iron Age world, and we want to maybe even discuss other projects like kind of Bronze Age, you know, burnt mounds or hut circles or stone circles, that kind of thing. You know, you could point to, say, the Irish National Heritage Park or Butcher Farm. There's any number of kind of historical reenactment places which we've kind of drawn inspiration from. So the Brock is not just a stone tower, it's many other things as well. So yeah, it's been a long process, and we feel that we're in the right place now, finally, figuratively and physically, for this Brock to you know, to continue.
And Kirsty, more on that, on the sighting and where it is in the landscape, and yeah, that this being part of a wider archaeological sort of landscape that you can situate it in.
Yeah. So Latherin, well, near Latherin and the sites elsewhere. Yeah, if you look on any OS map or even on Canmore, the historic environment record, you'll see that the area surrounding the site, or nearby the site, I should say, not surrounding it, but nearby, as Ken said, there's two brochs nearby, but there's also this much longer chronological period of human occupation and activity in that area. So I think actually it's really nice that we have a site that is located to, well, specifically two brochs that were built as well. Because it does give that like continuity. And yeah, as we often joke, it would be funny if we're building a brock and we find something else whilst building it. Because obviously archaeologists are involved in that process when there's, especially when there's archaeology nearby already. And yeah, so to know that we have a site that was chosen by Iron Age communities in the past to build their own brocks, and we're siting in a very similar place, then I think that sort of maybe adds a bit of, yeah, like it makes it kind of quite a genuine choice of a site. It's somewhere that they would have chosen in the past as well as the present. So hopefully it'll be quite representative of people's choices in the past too.
And can you sort of both tell us about, you know, sort of the environment of the site as well? Ken talked a bit about the hills and the flatness, and I've done some archaeology out there, but it was in a Second World War B-17 and RAF service that crashed there, because it looks so lovely and flat, but it's actually very kind of, it's almost like the Deadpools in Lord of the Rings. It's sort of, you can go up to your chest, and the organic preservation as well in some of these areas is incredible because of these blanket peat bogs. So presumably, again, that's something that you guys are having to take into consideration, because there's a big, amazing natural world there as well.
Yeah, so it's obviously, well, at the moment, the land itself is actually crofting land. So it's got as far as I know, it's got grazing on it, but just rough grazing. So, yeah, in terms of land use, I think it's quite boggy at the moment. It's certainly situated on the edge of the flow country. And this huge expanse of blanket bogs. So yeah, there's obviously a lot of like natural considerations, and we did have, and we probably will have more things like bird surveys and sort of ecologists involved as well. Because we don't want to come in and just sort of bulldoze a really lovely natural, very important part of Scotland's natural landscape. So and especially in the past, archaeology does situate itself far better within natural landscapes rather than just, we have a tendency to sort of destroy them these days. So I think people in the past were a lot better at living with the land rather than yeah, replacing things. So
going forward, when you've got the kind of build started, is it going to be something, Ken referenced the Gwaedelong Castle, which is a 13th century castle style, but being made over 25, 30 years of a project. Is that the kind of thing that we'll be able to see a visitor over the 10, 15 years, and imagine you kind of always be building and repairing and rethinking things, that I could go there in 5, 10 years from now and I'll see it in different stages, you know, because that's really, it's the process as well, isn't it, that we're here to see. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say for me as an archaeologist, it's actually a really interesting research project as well, because especially if we're able to build using predominantly traditional techniques, which I think is still the hopes, then it will be a really interesting study for learning about these, well, the construction challenges and the benefits of some of the techniques that are used. In terms of like, yeah, the sort of continuity of construction, I think we do have to remember that the brochs themselves, they're not static structures. They people didn't just like throw them up in a summer and then they were like, okay, cool, we've got a broch that stays the same. They would have been something that changed and expanded or contracted over time. And you see the emergence and then the decline of like broch villages that are built around the brochs. So yeah, I think that it would parallel what we see in the archaeology, to have that happening as a visitor attraction too.
And you're talking about the archaeology, and actually earlier today we interviewed Rebecca Boyd about Viking Age houses in Ireland and the sort of micro kind of surveys that you can do. You can see the use where, you can see where people have constantly stepped over a threshold. You can see the corners of these buildings where people have used the natural light coming in the doorways. Could you just give us, stepping away from the future project at the moment, just a sort of idea of what we do know about, you know, if I were to enter into a Brock now, or when your project's finished, what is it I see when I come in that doorway? Because there's only one sort of entrance exit to a Brock, am I right? And then there's various sort of chambers, and could you tell us a little bit about, again, if we're walking into a Brock, what we're actually seeing? Maybe sort of Kenneth can take the lead on that.
Well, we've actually based our own Brock, or rather Ian, who's been kind of responsible for the general layout and architecture of the Brock. He's designed the Brock with a number of other Brocks in mind. So first and foremost, the floor plan. So if you're actually entering into the Brock itself, floor plan will be very similar to the Brock at the Cairns in South Ronaldsay in Orkney, which has been excavated by Martin Carruthers over a period of 10 years or so now. So if you wanted to, we've actually got a comparison of a Brock site over in Orkney, which we're using, because it's so well researched, basically, that it allows us with a lot more to play with and a lot more to discuss as well, actually, if we've got excavation going on at the moment. And we're able to talk about, say, for instance, hearths and what kind of things, what they're finding in the cells and in the lower floors, the kind of layout as well, and what kind of features they're finding here. Because a lot of rocks in Caithness, for instance, were excavated really sort of during antiquarian periods, and they were not excavated particularly well. But the Cairns Brock is, you know, a really top-notch, very scientific, very thorough, slow burn of a dig. So we thought that would be the best place for it. And then, so we'll have a guard cell on the right. Fun fact, the Owsdale guard cell presently, Owsdale Brock, one of the Brocks that we conserved in 2021, currently has, I believe, possibly the most northerly assemblage of European cave spiders in the guard cell in there. So if you have a fear of spiders, or if you like being spooked out, then you can go in there and see what a guard cell's like. But just watch out, because they dangle quite menacingly above your head. But we'll have a guard cell there, as many Brocks did. And then turning left in the Brock, we will have a kind of stairwell which will lead you up to the first floor. So the ground floor will probably be quite dark, because as we're aware, Brocks don't have windows. It'll be probably quite smelly. It'll be maybe lit by fires or candles, and perhaps we'll try and use something similar to oil of some description, perhaps whale oil, which I believe they found from Clachtal Brock. So we're trying to, you know, use as much information from a number of excavations, both recent and kind of more historic, to populate and colour in the Brock that we're building. And once we get to the first floor, it becomes a bit more difficult, actually, because the archaeology doesn't really remain or exist from there. We will hopefully be using, again, evidence from Clachtal Brock, which would suggest that there was a sort of reed matting or flooring used for construction, probably over the timbers that were built across the floor. But beyond that, it becomes a lot more difficult to understand what's going on these certain levels. So perhaps some sort of sleeping area, perhaps you know, some light industry type work going on, you know, things like maybe like weaving or maybe cooking, something like that. And then as you go further up the Brock, it becomes a lot more unapparent, really, as to what was actually happening. And then we come to the roof, of course, which is a big, very controversial question in some circles. There are many who hold the belief that Brocks were unroofed. And I always say to people, would you live in a unroofed house in Scotland? Probably not. That wouldn't be a pleasant experience. So we believe that there would be a roof, probably thatch, timbers, again, used to kind of hold this up. But that's the whole point behind the Brock project, is to understand what the best methods of constructing a Brock are, what's easiest, what works well. Perhaps a roof doesn't actually work. Maybe it just it blows off or something like that. So it's, you know, it's quite exciting for us to get involved with this challenge. But we will begin to see what works and what doesn't work. You know, perhaps, you know, industrial tasks in the bottom floor of a Broch don't make any sense because it's just too dark, or it's just dusty, or difficult to breathe, or not comfortable or pleasant. So, it you know, this becomes an exercise in some imagination, but in actually sort of practically trying it out and see what we would do. I think the key points are: the first floor is going to be the ground floor. Sorry, will be quite an industrial centre, and it might be quite smelly, and it might be quite spooky as well. Actually, if you think about those kind of closed liminal spaces that the Brochs inhabit. And then moving into the first, I think you're going to encounter an altogether more cathedral-esque type appearance as the space of the Broch begins to open up. And I think I like the kind of dichotomy that presents in Broch architecture and experiences, and the way that these two kind of meld together through archaeology. So it's all, some of this is derived from modern day excavations. And we will probably use a lot from other excavations as well. And some of it is, as I say, kind of experimental archaeology and learning as we go along.
And yeah, Kirsty, yeah, just your thoughts on the interior in terms of archaeologically, but also within the project to build a Broch.
Yeah, I think Ken said mostly what I would have said as well. But I guess at all stages we're working with, it's not just whatever we fancy throwing in. It's all very, it's informed by, as we said, art, like excavations that are going on elsewhere. We're hoping to maybe do some excavations around a Broch at some point in the future with the project. But also there's been quite a lot of like scholarship on these different debates about Broch architecture. And I think for me, that's what one of the real strengths of the Broch project is, that it is a team of not just archaeologists. And like we tend, like, so you've got the two, well, two of the archaeologists on the team talking to you today, but the rest of, most of us aren't, like, yeah, most of the rest, Ken's pulling a face there, but you are an archaeologist.
I really wouldn't say I'm an archaeologist. I'm an archaeologist degree and a bit of a.
But like you get the perspective of people who are who work with work in architecture or building designs or stonemasonry and stone carving and things like that, and those having those sort of working relationships, they raise questions that you just don't think about if you're just a team of archaeologists, because you don't have the sort of technical training that a builder or an architect necessarily does. So. I think that's a really interesting part of the project, that actually it'll be informed by different people with lots of different skills in different areas as well.
And it must have been like that 2,000 years ago. You would get
exactly, yeah,
Greg, who was good at stonemasoning, and you know, Johnny, the Broch builder, who was better at thatching. So, you know, I think that, and perhaps there was some sort of equivalent of like a pencil pushing project manager type person as well. I don't know what he'd be pushing instead, some sort of twig. I think this, I mean, this project is, like I say, it's like trying to build a theme park. You know, where do you start? Who do you start with? You have to have a team of individuals who are, you know, talented or good at, proficient at certain things. And I think, you know, I owe an awful lot to Ian and to Robin and to Chris, Dawn, Pete, everyone who's been involved with the project, because it simply wouldn't be where it is today without their help.
And I just, sorry. Yeah, just whilst I remember again, being able to do two podcasts in a day and think about the sort of domestic spaces that, you know, reading Rebecca's book, it was like she talked about, you know, sort of smoke ceilings and things like that. And presumably you're going to then sort of get ideas of soundscapes and where the smoke, you know, levels out at. And so, and you know, the idea that you got that from these sort of type one houses in Viking Age Dublin, that the reenactors were telling sort of, you know, the academic and Rebecca Boyd, that you want to be, even though the corners are, seem to be these sort of spaces that are kind of out the way, and it's not, when you look at sort of these sort of access analyses that you can do in terms of where you want to go and naturally want to go, you don't tend to want to go in the corners. But reenactors are saying, well, this is actually, you know, if it's raining outside and you're doing your sort of amber, or you're doing your woodworking or whatever, you actually want to be in those corners next to the door because that's where the best light is out with surrounding the hearth. So, I mean, yeah, that's it. But you guys acknowledge that, you know, you're going to do a lot of learning as you go on. Once you've built it, you'll say, well, actually, this doesn't work at all. And you might need to modify things completely once you've built them because it's so loud, say, in the first floor that you think, actually, this doesn't work as a living space. So there must be something we're doing wrong. So, yeah, that's going to be fascinating. That's what people will be seeing over the years. You'll be seeing you guys making mistakes. And, you know, I get that. I guess that you're not scared of that for years already.
Tom, I'm all too quick to point it out, of course, but I accept that. But yeah, I think it's like I said, it's a kind of learning process. You know, learning what works best essentially for brochs.
And we see that in the archaeology too, that some brochs didn't work and they either just stopped building them or they sort of took them down and then rebuilt them. So yeah, like we're sort of doing what people did 2000 years ago.
Just yeah, absolutely.
Health and safety requirements. So
yeah, Boo Broch, for instance, that's been built over a period of 200-300 years, I believe, and it collapsed. Well, it didn't collapse, but it failed at one point, and then was kind of enlarged, if you like. But at one period, it had a sutter in as well, and before that, it was a burial site, a cairn site, I believe, actually, a kind of Neolithic cairn, actually. You know, these sites aren't static, so it'll be quite a journey for this Broch as well to go on and see, you know, what we decide to do with it and how we, you know, build the best version of the Broch that we can, but what changes we might need to make.
And I think, you know, because you guys have given them so much time already, but I think I want to kind of move towards finishing off, but I want to ask about the community and the issues that are facing, particularly in Caithness at the moment. I know you guys do really got a lot of good work in terms of researching that it's not just a sort of, you know, an archaeology kind of academic vanity project. It's got to fulfill a role. So if you could maybe just, you know, both of you tell me a little bit about what you think this will do and what needs to be done. You know, I sort of volunteer in sort of, you know, as it were, inner city Glasgow in a sort of community archaeology project, and there's certain things that we know we need to do, and it's not just, you know, look at the nice things we have in this sort of museum space. It's like what it can do for the people around it. So could you tell us a little bit about, again, the issues facing this sort of community in Caithness and this project, and what it will hope to do in terms of providing employment and bringing people in, increasing dwell time, to kind of use an expression?
Yeah, essentially, I mean, I think people might know Caithness for two reasons, which is Caithness glass, and which is no longer produced in Caithness, and Dounreay nuclear power plant is something that pops up quite a lot, and it was a real boon for the area. It was quite, it was the first ever prototype fast breeder reactor in the UK, so it's quite a prestigious, a completely upended society up in Caithness. And up until the construction of Dounreay, there was quite a slide in terms of the demographics falling after World War II, and it had been falling for a number of years anyway. But the arrival of Dounreay and the arrival of thousands of skilled mechanics, engineers, scientists, people working in laboratories, and their families and associated professions along with that as well, gave Caithness, and in particular Thurso, a real shot to the arm in terms of people living there. And it changed society as well. You know, schools were built. It became, you know, Thurso in particular, again, became a bit of a kind of bustling metropolis. And that's not something that you would really expect if you were travelling north of Inverness, because it just seems to get more and more kind of rural. But then you would come to Thurso and Wick, and you know, you see that there was quite thriving towns actually. But now Dounreay has been around for more than 60 years now, and it is being decommissioned, which still brings with it some scientific prowess and challenges which attract people from the world over. A lot of graduates are still based here at Dounreay, but Dounreay does not employ anything like the numbers it used to. And that means that there's challenges ahead now for Caithness, because to a degree it has somewhat depended on on Dunre as a provider of jobs and economic security. To a degree, it was actually a monoculture of jobs and economic security, which is a bit dangerous. So this has led the Highland Council to project that over the next 20 or so years, the population will decline by just under 20% in Caithness. And I can't think of another area which has suffered something like that in modern times. So somewhat worrying, perhaps, these figures. So we believe that our heritage and that our archaeology can be another means or an avenue of economic stability in the area. We've got a litany of sites here in Caithness which are underpromoted. We have a really rich historical background in terms of what was excavated and explored here in antiquarian times. And we believe that a light should be shone on Caithness once more in terms of its Broch sites, but of course its castles and cairns too. And we think that the Broch could be a really, an unmissable draw for the area, and will help shine a light to the wider archaeology of the area as well, and help people to kind of stay a little bit longer and experience Caithness, because it has been somewhat maligned in terms of tourism. It's not the West Coast. It's not got the kind of traditional Scottish vistas which you might be expecting if you were to visit Scotland. It's an altogether flatter, less rugged perhaps, area of Scotland. But to me, it's no less beautiful than anywhere else in the country. I hope that, we'll be able to certainly attract people with an interest in the past, and hopefully they'll be able to stay and enjoy the other many delights of the county as well.
Thanks, Kenneth. And Kirsty, your just sort of thoughts on, again, the future and the community, and, because I know that's something you're also very interested in as well, what archaeology can do long term for communities.
Yeah, so as Kenneth said, there's obviously going to be a real, there could be a very good economic benefit for the local community that's involved with. I think I'm not entirely sure the number of jobs that the Broch would necessarily provide, but there'd certainly be a reasonable amount. But yeah, for me, it's like, I my research isn't on the sort of social value of archaeology so much, but I really believe in archaeology being very inclusive. Archaeology in the past is for everybody. It's all of our pasts. I think in terms of making it more accessible and more visible, as Ken said, there's a lot of archaeology in Caithness, but it's not had the same kind of public presentation as archaeology in Orkney, for example. And as a result, it is just overlooked. And I think that reflects back, it feeds back into the local communities that then think, oh, well, we don't really have anything special, but they do. They have something that's, I think they reckon there's equally as many archaeology sites in Caithness as there are in Orkney or more, but they just haven't really been looked at. So in terms of having that really positive social impact, we want to like foster that sense of pride of place and the sort of developing heritage narratives for that area as well.
Yeah, and I think that's, you were saying about the landscape. It's, once you're there, it's sort of the Scotland that you don't see. I think Kenneth was maybe referencing online the other day about everything's about West Coast and beaches and things like that. And having spent days, literally going through the blanket bogs, it's kind of otherworldly in a very special way that I think a lot of the east coast of Britain has, but Caithness is that plus not many people. But Brochs, aircraft crashes, Second World War, you've got castles. It's something that people think they know Scotland, but you kind of don't know Caithness, and it's as I say, it's the other. It's very different. I mean, I was as a Vikingist. When you see the place names there, it's just suddenly completely different. There's isogloss, and then it's Scandinavian. It's just, if you think, Shetland, Orkney, and then you've also got Caithness, and again, that kind of can get overlooked, but you look at the names there, and it's just wall to wall, and it's just, even in Viking studies, we kind of tend to overlook it, because it's mainland, and you think mainland, it's islands, and it's west coast, or anything like that, but it's Caithness is just I mean, there's going to be so much rich archaeology that we've not even sort of looked at in my world. So it's definitely a place that is, yeah, it's just so rich. And I know Kenneth doing work on the John O'Groats Trail, and John O'Groats had gone through a Renaissance. I was there with my dad in 1996 before the Renaissance, but it was still amazing and fantastic. We stayed at the post office near there as well, when it was the only place you could kind of stay. And now you've got these amazing sort of boutique hotels. So yeah, it's changing sort of, every 5, 10 years it becomes completely unrecognizable. So I do urge people to go there and not just pass through it in terms of, the North Coast 500. Actually, go inland and, just look at a map and just find yourself in a completely different world. And before I start blathering on, getting emotional and really into things, that can you tell our listeners how they can help? Because you guys have got great social media. You've got a fantastic, it's a beautiful website. I'm actually looking at it again today, but there's opportunities we can donate. There's online shop. There's a membership option as well. Could you just give us a little bit of idea of how people listening to this can now go to their computer and help this project? No, sorry. Either anyway, yeah, just flip a coin. It's you both know so much
I'll
about
lead
it.
on
Don't
that
worry.
bit too. Yeah, I mean, we are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I haven't taken a great leap into TikTok yet, but maybe one day. Yeah, we do have an account on TikTok, but it's not relevant at the moment. Yeah, so give us a follow if you are into very, very poorly made memes about Brochs with the occasional educational nugget there as well. But if you really want to help us, then please become a friend. It's completely free. You can do that on our website, which is www.thebrochproject.co.uk. You can also become a member from anywhere in the world. We have members from America, New Zealand, Australia, Finland, all over the world, Thurso. And that's only £10 a year, and it really helps to demonstrate support for our project as well.
You
I think that's
can
it. If
also
people want.
sign up as a friend as well, if you want to join the mailing list. It's not membership, but yeah, just to keep up to date with the sort of Brock activities and things as well. And yeah, the membership change for people outside of Caithness. It used to be that you could be a member if you're a resident of Caithness. So I wasn't a member for a little while. But for anyone that's listening that couldn't sign up before, you now can sign up from, yeah, as Ken said, anywhere in the world, which and we've watched our membership grow and spread around the globe quite rapidly. So that's really exciting.
And of course, if they want to donate, then great. Donations. We are a charity. This is all volunteer led. We try and do this as much as possible in our spare time. So if people want to make a donation, it's all going towards the promotion and development of a place which I think really deserves promotion and development in terms of their archaeology. Yeah, gratefully receive those as well. Of course, if people have any questions, if they want to. They want to know a bit more about Brochs. If they want to volunteer, then they can also email us. They can get in touch with us through as well, of course. But email is contact@thebrochproject.co.uk.
And I
And yeah,
think
you
that's,
can.
yeah, sorry,
Oh,
Christy, go on.
sorry,
Yeah.
no. I was going to say, yeah, there's lots of information on our website as well, including if you're up in Caithness and you're visiting and you want to go and see some of, like Ken mentioned, Owsdale Broch earlier on. If you want to go and see some of the cool Broch sites or cool archaeological or heritage sites or just tourist sites in general around Caithness, we've got an interactive online map. There's lots of information about like the history of the Broch project, but also Brochs and things on the website. So definitely worth checking out. And you can buy some cool Brock merchandise as well.
Oh yeah,
So,
of course. Can't forget about the Brock pins, the
yeah,
famous
the merch
Brock watches.
is fantastic.
We're constantly
And
developing that, so yeah, always check back on our website too for new products.
yeah, no, it's fantastic. And the map as well that you had on, is the current one is the one that kind of looks like a sort of a Lord of the Rings style map. Is that still the
Yeah, that's all. Is that? I think we've still got some small
Yeah, I
print
think.
available. Yes, so by all means, of course, just email us and let us know if you want some more, and we'll get some more in.
Fantastic. Well, as you can hear, the enthusiasm is infectious. But it's I think it's, you know, what we can do is support, and it's really good. Yeah, if it's just even a follow you do, if you share this podcast and more people hear about it, if you buy a pin badge or a map or become a friend or get on that mailing list, it's a little thing that we can all do. And I think, as you've seen, it's just all positive. It's positive for the community. It's positive for, you know, it's a sort of global sort of shared patrimony sort of thing. So,
Come to Caithness as well. Come and visit the Brocks of Caithness too. You talked about the beaches as well of Scotland. I mean, Caithness has got incredible beaches, and Tom, of course, it's got a Viking settlement on a beach with two brocks either side, essentially. So Fresick Bay, that's just, you know, that is chef's kiss, is what that is.
That's an A plus ultra. You don't need archaeology after that. Once you've seen that, you may as well.
So there's lots to see, and we're like I say, we really encourage people to come and visit this place itself, and we're happy to help. Want to know what the best thing to do and see. Come and see the Brocks.
Come and see the Brocks. Right. Well, I think that is a perfect way to end it. And it just remains me to say to thank you to the Caithness Brocks Project as a whole, because there's many members that are not on the podcast today. But thank you in particular for now to Kenneth and Kirsty. And please feel free to come back on when you've got your next set of update on that. So thanks again, guys, and thank you everyone for listening. Well, look, as you said at the intro, unfortunately you couldn't be there on the day, but what do you think of this amazing community-led project of Brocks in general?
Amazing, and it's something that you can be interested in without an interest in archaeology, because it's such a fascinating part of history, and it's marrying now with then, and I love it. I love communities getting together. I love them all learning about things from the past, and I love them telling people about it. That's what we always say. That's what we're here to do, tell people about it. And this is another way to get the modern world interested in the past, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. The outreach in Caithness Brocks Project is unparalleled. It's very funny, it's witty, but it's not just for the sake of itself. It's the fact that they've got this mission, if you will, to help a local community. And we hope you enjoyed it just as much as all of us. You can clearly hear that we had a great time. And I'll say thank you to the Caithness Brocks Project. There's lots of people involved in that, but Kirsty and Kenneth were able to give their time when we recorded this episode. And I'll leave it as ever to Luke Barry to take us out and remind you to listen and subscribe.
Exactly. Listen to us, guys. Subscribe to us, guys. Share it. If there's anybody you think would be interested in this, send it to them. Don't be shy about it. Spread the word. And if you have any thoughts on today's episode, or indeed any of our other episodes, leave us a comment underneath our videos on YouTube. Leave us a review on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. Message us on Twitter or X or whatever it's called, on Facebook, on Instagram. We're always happy to hear from you. This is what we're here for. This is all about outreach. We're reaching out to you. Reach back. Let us know we're not doing this alone. This is The Shindig. My name is Luke Barry.
And I'm Tom Horn. Thank you for listening.